Welcome to the podcast of First Universalist Church of Minneapolis. We are a faith community committed to dismantling oppression and building beloved community, a place of shared liberation, joy, and belonging. To learn more, visit us online at firstuniversalistchurch.org.
Good morning or evening, friend. Here's your friendly announcer. I've serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster. Could change your joy and laughter to tears and pain. Is that lost in need of love today?
Gone round, breaking many hearts. always imagined that she laid her head down when she was listening to the corn. But maybe she picked it up, an ear of corn, like a phone. Well, either way, Barbara McClintock discovered new science about how ancestors pass along their traits to their children. And I am still amazed at her unusual approach to science. Her fellow scientists didn't take her seriously. They thought she was pretty weird. And they weren't nice to her. Now, I relate to McClintock's story. In my courses, I often stood out because I too had some quirky ideas about what I had thought about my assignments. And I was used to people, the guys in the class, mostly rolling their eyes and smirking because I wasn't talking about real science. But seeing McClintock's determination to stick with it helped me to stay with my own views and to learn to trust myself. Do you think she imagined that I and other people, hundreds of people all around the world, could relate to her and inspire us to stay the course? Do you think she talked back to the corn? Do you think maybe she had some corn in her pocket when she won the Nobel Peace Prize? Not Peace Prize, the Nobel Prize for Science when she was 81 years old. What can we imagine if we are open to things that just at the time seem pretty strange or corny? Okay. Now, let's take a moment to center ourselves and to prepare for today's worship meeting and exploration. Will you breathe with me? I need a breath. As we breathe in, can we fill our lungs with the spirit of love and send that love right away? As we breathe out, can we open our minds to discover things we couldn't have previously imagined? I invite you now, let us listen for the peace that sings to us as we take three deep breaths. I welcome each of you to our gathering. It matters to us that you are here with us, online, in the balcony, in your hearts, and right here. This is the place where love guides us and service defines us. And we mean to welcome your whole self with a learning, loving, and growing embrace. At this moment, I invite our chalice lighter, which is Glenn Thomas, but Arifa's closer. Okay. As the flame is lit, let us together recite our covenant, the words that we use to remind ourselves of our commitment to our community, this community of love and its people. Together, let us say, love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant. to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Let us find inspiration in this light and in these stories to discover the call of love and to answer it in the ways that we live. May this time to make a difference to each of us that changes the world for the better and for good.
Good morning. And welcome to First Universalist Church of Minneapolis. My name is Kathy Geist. I'm a member of the church's Board of Trustees and a member of the Climate and Environmental Justice Team, known as the EJ Team. I'm honored to welcome you to this Earth Day service. This morning, I'm leading worship with so many wonderful people, including Bob Friedman, Stan Sattinger, and Gary Hoover, members of the EJ Team, Nancy Potter, our worship associate, Reverend Arif, Reverend Jen, Dr. Glenn Thomas, Reverend Ashley, and Amy K. Bryant, our team of John and Olu in the sound booth, making the technology work, and Paolo De Buche, leading the newly formed choir in their first Sunday leading worship with us in quite some time. It is important to say something about the EJ Team and why we're here today. The EJ Team is both hopeful and very concerned for the future of our Earth, our one and only Earth. There is a quotation by evolutionary biologist Stephen Jay Gould, with which I deeply agree. We will not fight to save what we do not love. We will not fight to save what we do not love. Please take a moment, close your eyes, and envision some parts of nature that you really love. A rabbit, a tree, a lake, a tiny plant, a butterfly, whatever comes to mind and into your heart. Let yourself appreciate what you envisioned and send them some love. The EJ Team's mission is to live out our commitments to the Earth and to justice, reduce the environmental impacts of our church and our community, and engage our congregants in working collectively to connect and take action. We embrace the seventh UU principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence, of which we are a part. Stewardship of our fragile Earth and seeking climate justice go back at least 25 years for this congregation. From the very early days when religious education parents formed global friendly families, to the larger group calling themselves eco-minds, focusing on finite resources and advocating to prevent further climate change. 20 years ago, the annual Earth Day Fair with the inflated Earth Ball appeared in the social hall, and it's there today too. We sincerely hope you will visit the social hall today with your children, if you have children, after the service, to see the displays and help answer their questions. Their future is in our hands, in our actions, and in our commitments. The activities and information tables will guide you toward the ultimate goal, to love and save what must be saved. Our passion for sustainability has never stopped. As we became a UUA-sanctioned green sanctuary, and then joined Congregations Caring for Creation, investing together our actions with many denominations, We have just been recertified by our faithful action partner as a climate justice congregation. Today, we have more reasons than ever to keep this legacy alive. May this Earth Day service, along with the debut of the new choir, inspire us toward a renewed commitment from all ages to embrace the journey guided by our seventh principle, because all living things are interconnected. And please remember, we will not fight to save what we do not love. As we create and live into the beloved community, let us profess our love for our Earth home, investing together, willing to fight now for ourselves, for future generations, and for all of life. May it be so.
Last week, in worship, after some of you went to your classes, the older youth and adults potted a plant. We took dirt from these big metal buckets. How many of you were here last week when we did this, right? You remember that? They were like these big tubs. Probably could have taken a bath in them. We took dirt from these huge metal tubs, and we added that dirt to pots, which had flowers and plants in them. We warmed up our hands before we moved the dirt into the pot, just like we do before blessings. Let's practice that together. Can you show me how we warm up our hands when we're getting ready to bless something or someone? That feels good, doesn't it? You can keep doing that if you want. It's kind of fun. When we moved the dirt from the bucket to the pot, we thought about one way that we want to be when we experience change. We all experience change all the time. But I'm curious, for the youth that are present, what is one change that has happened in your life? Feel free to just shout it out. You just turned 12? Woo! That is a big change. Like firmly into the double digits. Happy birthday! What are some other changes? I heard it. You moved! You're gonna move! Oh my goodness. Yeah. You got a cat! That's awesome. Other changes, please. You lost a tooth. That's a big change. Any other changes anybody want to share? Things are changing all the time. Yes, please. You got glasses. They look fantastic, and I bet you can see better. Things are changing all the time, and we can experience changes in different ways. Sometimes we have a good reaction to the change. Sometimes we have maybe a not-so-good reaction to the change. Sometimes the change is just kind of, kind of neutral. But I'm curious, what was the most helpful thing that you did to get through that change? It's a little harder question, so take a minute with it. What helped you to move through that change, whether it was a change that felt good or not so good? Complain? Giving voice to your feelings. Yeah. Sharing how we're feeling can help us move through changes. Friends help us move through changes, for sure. Petting your cat, absolutely. Making lists. Any other list makers here? Yeah. Oh, that delicious illusion of control. What's that? Read books and ignore it. Hey. Yeah. Take your mind off of it. So, change is happening to us all the time, right? All the time. I want you to hold those ideas about how we work with change, how we move through change, because I want to transition us to talking about these plants. These plants are here because we are celebrating Earth Day. Little did we know last week when we were potting plants that they might still be here for our Earth Day celebration. Okay, we actually knew that. Who can tell me something about Earth Day? Let's hear from the youth. It's about the Earth! Fabulous. Thank you. So who can tell me something about the Earth? Maybe one thing that you love about the Earth. Yeah, please. There is life on the Earth. There is a lot of life on the Earth. What are you all thinking in the back there? Yeah, please. There's oxygen, yep. What else? It is the only planet that we know of for sure that can support life. And certainly the only planet that can support our lives. That's a pretty good reason to have a day for the Earth. So we love the Earth, right? We love that the Earth supports all of us being alive and healthy. We know that one way that we can help the Earth is by planting flowers and trees to help the Earth keep our air clean and to support the lives of other animals like bees and butterflies, bunny rabbits. Last Wednesday, before our community dinner, some of our kids and families helped make some flowers and worms for our plants. Did anybody here help with that? To help celebrate Earth Day, we're going to add those flowers to our pot. And I want to invite you, as I am adding these flowers to our pot, each time I put a flower in, please say, "Thank you, Earth." All right, you ready? Thank you, Earth. Thank you, Earth. And thank you for helping to thank this Earth that we are so fully reliant on.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My, it's good to see each and every one of you at church. It bodes well for the universe and for the earth that you are here in community. You know, the work that we do as Unitarian Universalists is steeped in the concept of democracy, and democracy is one of those words that comes from the Greek, meaning demos, people, and kratos, the power. The people have the power in Unitarian Universalism, and we express that in all sorts of ways. Here's an example. I serve as Director of Worship Arts Ministries, and so it's my task to make a lot of decisions about the content and the operation of worship. That power is delegated to me by the senior minister, who is contracted by the board of trustees, who are selected by the people. So even when one person makes a decision, they make a decision in Unitarian Universalism on behalf of the entire community. That's the way we work, that's what we strive for, and that's how we grow. And so I'm coming to you in that light with request for your help. I need to make a decision, and I need the people to have the power. We sing a song at the end of our worship services, we have for a while, called Where You Go, I Will Go. And it's written by a very gifted, wise songwriter named Shoshana Jedwab. And even when many people are gathered and all the people are wise, there are times when they sharply disagree, and in this case, there very well may be some sharp disagreement in our midst. You see, Shoshana Jedwab has come out publicly and announced her stance on the conflict in Gaza. If you don't know, and even if you do, it's still true, there are people dying in Gaza, there's a genocide in Gaza, there are people hurting in Gaza, there are people lost in Gaza. This isn't the only conflict, this isn't the only atrocity, this isn't the only genocide. There are genocides in Africa happening right now that no one's ever told you about. And still every single one matters. We sing a song by a person who has come out publicly and announced that they want nothing to do with anyone who has a particular opinion on the conflict in Gaza. And we, as an open church with a lot of opinions trying to live together, now need to decide how we are in relationship with this song. I'm not interested in outright censorship. I'm not interested in ignoring any issue. And this is not a conversation about the community's stance on Israel and Palestine. That's not what I'm about. But I need your help to make the decision of how we engage this song, how we are in relationship with it. So here's what I'm doing. I'm asking each of you into a meeting that happens next week after the service. On April 28th, I'm going to sit and I'm going to listen to you. If you have a relationship, a close relationship with Israel, with Palestine, with Gaza, if you have a close relationship or ever pray for peace, this meeting is asking for you. Come and help me to fill the room with your stories, your opinions, your experience, your insight. One person need not make this decision alone. But together, no matter what the outcome, we can say that we deepened community by talking with one another, by hearing one another, and being open to one another in our own hearts. That's all I'm asking. Come and listen with me. Come and talk to me. And help me to help us make this choice together. Amen?
Amen.
I'll see you next week.
Join me in a spirit of prayer, a spirit of meditation. As we breathe in and out together in this space and time that we make holy, listen to the voice within. Listen for what your heart and spirit want to bring forward into this loving and caring community. Listen to what you want to bring forward, to speak out loud, to hold silently in your heart, to type in the chat if you are with us online. What you want held in community, so that we can make real what we know in our hearts, which is that you are not alone, that we are holding it together. As we in this community give voice to what we are holding and want to lift in worship today, we will say together in response, you are not alone. We are holding it together. For those feeling the impact of the earthquake in San Francisco, you are not alone. We are holding it together.
For my niece Shannon, who will graduate from the U next month with a degree in environmental policy.
For Shannon graduating next month, you are not alone. We are holding it together. For your aunt, and for pedestrians, for people on bikes. You are not alone. We are holding it together. For the budget. You are not alone. We are holding it together. For Corinne's first smile, you are not alone. We are holding it together.
For the NAACP helping the people of Rochester deal with an outbreak of racism this past week.
For the NAACP helping the people in Rochester to negotiate an instance, an upwelling of overt and clearly visible racism. You are not alone. We are holding it together.
For the young people forming their faith statements in coming of age, getting closer.
For the young people in coming of age who are approaching, sharing their faith statements, you are not alone. We are holding it together. Your high school music teacher who passed away from pancreatic cancer. You are not alone. We are holding it together. For all who are negotiating cancer right now, you are not alone. We are holding it together. For all that we have named aloud, for all that we have named online, for all that we have named in the silence of our hearts, may we know that we are not alone, that we are holding it together. May it be so, and amen.
My name is Jen Crow. I use she, her pronouns. I'm your senior minister here, and it is up to me to give you a stewardship update on where we are and also invite our offering today. I want to tell you, it's been a powerful week around here. Since I was in this spot last week and shared an update on where we are with our stewardship and budget season, so many of you have come forward and responded with questions and care and ideas and energy by making a financial pledge for our upcoming fiscal year or by increasing the pledge you've already made. I'm so grateful for the ways you've been talking with us and with each other and leaning into the possibility and promise of who we are and who we can be together. I have felt us living into what we say on Sunday mornings, right? You are not alone. We are holding this together. And we know from practice that we can hold a lot more together than we can on our own. So this week has been powerful. When we gathered for our board meeting on Thursday night, we started by grounding ourselves in the mission and vision of our congregation, and by rooting ourselves in the words of the artist and activist Ricardo Levins Morales, who reminds us that the soil is more important than the seeds. The soil that we are nourishing is more important than the seeds. Now, in an environment like ours, in a congregation, the seeds are things like, I don't know, the choir. The seeds are things like the programs and the ministry that we create and start together. But the soil is what is underneath it all, what holds us, what nourishes us, and the generations that are to come. So you can see easily, I think, some of the seeds that are flourishing in our congregation. Our choir and our newly moving in new directions that are so exciting, our music ministry. Our folks who I have seen over this last week, people from this community putting their faith into action in leadership in the Minneapolis public schools. I've seen them working for a gender inclusion policy that would truly protect and care for all students and staff. I've seen them advocating for education support professionals and music education teachers. I've seen them out there in the negotiations. They are working hard, putting their faith in action. You all don't get to see these folks as often as I do, but we are about to mark the one-year anniversary of having a family with us in our sanctuary apartment. This is a seed that is certainly coming to fruition. This family that joined us almost a year ago, since they have been with us, they have known safety and community and support and care. They have welcomed a new child who is almost 1 year old. They have a son who has been able to be a participant in their Grace Neighborhood Nursery School, who is a partner with us. They have come here as new immigrants seeking asylum. They have gotten their driver's licenses and their ability to work and had access to health care and legal advocacy. This is a series of seeds that are growing out of the rich soil of this congregation. Last week, you heard our youth leading our service, and they were absolutely amazing, as they always are. And you heard some of them say they don't have so much in financial resources, but they have a lot in time and energy and talent, which they give freely to the church, caring for the youngest among us. And they brought a pretty great idea to our board meeting this week. You might not know it, but members of our youth group have been some of the most regular participants in the board meetings this year. It's fabulous to have them here. And upon hearing the news of where we are with our budget, they've started planning a talent show and fundraiser for the congregation, which will happen on May 18th. So they are pulling together a DJ, an MC, food. There are some questionable auction items that they are selecting that I believe involve pies and faces. It'll be great. There are all these seeds that are being planted right now. It's up to us to nourish the soil in which these seeds will grow, and these trees will provide shelter not only for us, but for the generations to come. Now, I've been working with the Finance Committee and the board over the last many weeks to create a realistic and balanced mission-driven budget that we are sharing with you, the congregation. There's a congregational budget meeting at 1 right after this in the sanctuary and on Zoom. Please join us to hear more. And in this meeting, you will hear about kind of the low, the midway, and the best case scenarios for what I am presenting. Based on the amount we have raised to date, which is just over $1 million, I am remaining, sorry to say, that we'll need to follow that lowest worst case scenario. And as I've been saying throughout the stewardship season, layoffs will come from the leadership positions, meaning from the associate and assistant ministers, that's Reverend Arif and Ashley, Director of Worship Arts, Dr. Glenn Thomas, and our Interim Director of Children, Youth, and Family Ministries, Allison Conley Vetter. If we are at that worst case scenario, we're looking at the layoff of 2 of those people and positions. If we are able to get to the midway budget and giving, we'll need to lay off 1 full-time position and person. If we can get to the best case scenario, we would be able to maintain our current staffing levels and most fully live into our values and nourish the soil for the seeds we are planting together. I share this with you not to bring everybody down, but to make sure we're all on the same page about where we are and where we could go together. This isn't finished. This isn't a done deal. In order to avoid making these staffing cuts, we need to manifest our collective power and put our gifts into this church. For some of you, that means significantly adding to your pledge for next year. For some of you, it means making a pledge for the first time. Whatever you're doing, however you're participating and giving, we are grateful and it matters. We can do so much more together than we can alone. I've seen us do amazing things again and again when the challenge is put before us. So let's work together to prepare the soil for a year and a future that we can thrive in. Now, pivot with me. All right, today, as we often do, we are sharing our morning offering with a partner in our work. This partner today is Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light. This organization works in partnership with faith and spiritual communities and all Minnesotans to transform power and bring the lights of people's unique gifts to addressing the climate crisis. When we share what we have, we can all have what we need. I invite your offering this morning. for all of the ways that we give and receive and grow together. We are grateful. Amen.
I'm Stan Sattinger. I will be reading from A Life on Our Planet by David Attenborough. It seems that, however grave our mistakes, nature will be able to overcome them, given the chance. The living world has survived mass extinctions several times before. But we humans cannot assume that we will do the same. We have come as far as we have because we are the cleverest creatures to have ever lived on Earth. But if we are able to continue to exist, we will require more than intelligence. We will require wisdom. Homo sapiens, the wise human being, must now learn from its mistakes and live up to its name. We who are alive today have the formidable task of making sure that our species does so. We must not give up hope. We have all the tools we need, the thoughts and ideas of billions of remarkable minds, and the immeasurable energies of nature to help us in our work. And we have one more thing, an ability perhaps unique among the living creatures on the planet, to imagine a future and work toward achieving it. We can make amends, manage our impact, change the direction of our development, and once again, become a species in harmony with nature. All we require is the will.
I will wait till the waters when they find their through the waters, this I know, I will wade through the waters, this I know. I will walk through the fires, this I know, I will walk through the fires, this I know,
this I know.
I will walk through the fires when they find their way to me, I will walk through the fires, this I know, I will walk through the fires, this I know. I will rebuild the mountains, this I know, I will rebuild the mountains, this I know. I will rebuild the mountains when they find their way to me. I will rebuild the mountains, this I know, I will rebuild the mountains, this I know.
I know, this I know. There are more fires burning,
burning.
There are more mountains falling. There are more waters rising.
Rising.
I will walk through the
fire.
I will rebuild the mountains.
Mountains.
There are more waters rising.
Rising.
There are more waters rising. This I know. There are more waters rising. This I know.
There are more waters rising. They will find their way to me.
There are more waters rising. This I know. There are more waters rising. This I know.
This I know. There are more waters rising. This I know. There are more waters rising. This I know. There are more waters rising. They will find their way to me. There are more waters rising. This I know. There are more waters rising. This I know.
I still have like butterflies in my stomach from that.
Anyone else?
Yeah.
And we have so few ways in the culture that we live in of knowing how to move energy through us. So do what you need to do. Yeah. Shake, stand up, wiggle, you know. As Reverend Jen shared a few moments ago, we are looking at some changes in staffing. And so this may well be one of my last times in the pulpit with you all. And so I just want to take a minute to take you in. That also means that I'm going to take up a little more space in this pulpit than I generally do. We have a very conflicted relationship with the idea of God in Unitarian Universalism. That might be putting it mildly. Wounded by our religious upbringing, galled by the hypocrisy of mainstream Christianity, raised in a nation that pretends it is not deeply Christian, despite so many examples to the contrary that it makes your head spin, there are good reasons for our conflicted relationship with the letters G-O-D, I'm not going to try to convince you otherwise. And I am aware that this means that we live in a very small box of theological possibilities when we accept the terms handed to us and don't find ways out. So today, I want to invite you to lean into a theological imagination much broader than the world that we live in right now. If the world that we live in right now is marked by scarcity and constriction around ideas of God, I want us to reach for abundance. This is an abundance that we know in our neighboring faith classes when our youth go out into the world, visit faith communities, and learn about the vast perspectives out there on what is ultimate and what gives life meaning. So what does that mean? Well, amongst other things, it means that it isn't just the white bearded guy in the sky. And what often happens is that our youth reach the end of seventh grade, knowing that the idea of God is a powerful one and one that we should consider. And I say that because the things that we believe shape who we understand ourselves to be as human beings, and therefore shape our actions, which therefore shapes what we believe. So to move us from a place of scarcity and constriction into a place of abundance and expansion, we need to tell ourselves different stories, and then we need to live them. This is exactly the move that theologian Sally McFaig makes when she argues that the earth is the body of God. McFaig was writing in the 1980s. Some of us were alive back then, some of us weren't, and if you weren't alive then, I'm going to try and probably fail to describe just a little bit of what that was like. By the mid-1980s, Earth Day was a known quantity in much of liberal America. Tensions over the oil crisis had everyone thinking about ways to be more energy efficient and more energy independent. Environmentalists saw a glimmer of hope. And they, and we, also saw many, many gathering clouds of war and global destruction in the form of a nuclear weapons race. At 48 years old, I think that I was one of the last to have regular nuclear war drills in school. And even that was elementary school. By the time I got to middle school, they were an artifact of the past. But the specter of nuclear annihilation was very real, very present, and the sense of living within a period of existential threat was palpable. I wonder how many of you lived in those times. Show of hands. All right. So if you are not raising your hand, take a minute to look around. See the people whose hands are raised, and please connect with them. Exchange phone numbers after the service, make plans to have coffee. This is an important part of our recent history and heritage. And the circumstances that these folks in our church that we grew up in, it shapes so much. And we need to know and to pass on these stories. Not to put too fine a point on it, but Sally McFaig was writing into the teeth of apocalypse. She was doing theology on the cusp of existential annihilation. In other words, not too different from the theology that we are doing today, with the presence of the earth and its suffering in our hearts and on our minds. Her method, which she called metaphorical theology, asked us to move into a place of imagination through her question, how would we think or act differently if this were true? She knew that she was working against entrenched notions of God or entrenched notions against God, just as we are today. And instead of arguing and trying to knock an idol off its base, she said, keep your idol. Keep those ideas. Just ask this question with me. How would we think or act differently if this were true? And then she said, what if this earth was the body of God? I get shivers every time I ask that question. And if you're struggling with this, let me remind you that some theologians have defined God as that which is greater than us, that upon which we are wholly reliant, and that which we cannot live without. Which is to say that nature, which is to say that our earth, does a very good job of fitting that definition and criteria. If we are going to have a God today, and particularly knowing that what we believe shapes how we act, and how we act shapes what we believe, thinking and acting as if the earth was the body of God would be an awfully good model of God to live with and live within. Hang out with me in that space of imagination for a few moments. Can you imagine how different things would be if we behaved and acted as if we believed that the earth that we walk on, the earth that gives us everything we have, is the body of our Creator? The funny thing, of course, is that we need not imagine at all. It is literally true. And like the literal definition of literal, it is literally true that we are wholly reliant upon the earth, that the forces of nature are far greater than we can ever be and beyond our understanding and imagination, and that we literally cannot live without it. As one of our perceptive young ones said earlier, the earth is the only planet we know of that we can live on. Western intellect has made the fundamental category error of believing that we are separate from that which we are inseparably apart. The earth is God, and we are intimately part of God's body. What would we do if we believed that were true? What would we not do? How would we move through a world where everything is holy, where everything is sacred, where everything is a gift? Let's take a minute to breathe that in, to see what that feels like in our insides. I know my breathing was up here. I'm going to bring it down. Down into my chest, down into my stomach. And as we breathe and pay attention to breath, we can imagine a favorite place or way of interacting with this earth, and then imagine, in whatever way seems right, that that place, that interaction, is an interaction with God, is an interaction with the holy. Hold on to whatever feels most connected to your being. And with that in one hand, with that in our hearts, with the other, join me in this question. What do you call it when someone keeps doing something over and over and over again to the detriment of themselves and their relationships? Insanity. What do we call it when someone uses something again and again and again, when they scarcely have any power to stop themselves from doing that which is so clearly destroying them? Yeah, in a lot of places, we would call that addiction. Dr. Gabor Mate says that addiction is any behavior that a person craves, finds temporary relief or pleasure in, but suffers negative consequences as a result of, and yet has difficulty giving up. Congregation, when I look at our world today, I cannot help but feel that our extractive economy and the way it structures our lives is exactly this relationship, a relationship of addiction. How we got here, How we got here is a long story. But I don't think that we can deny that the very ways that we sustain our lives are also killing this planet. Modern agriculture is depleting soil so much that we are seeing successively less nutritious vegetables in our diets. And our best thinking says we should apply more fossil fuel-derived fertilizer. Our clothing, our electronics, all of the stuff of our lives that make things so comfortable and so easy come at the cost of a planet that cannot sustain us in this manner for much longer. And none of this is particularly new news, is it? Anyone have a guess on when the earliest climate science was done that demonstrated that human industry was on a path toward a warmer and unlivable planet? You all are doing a lot better than the first service. Don't tell them I said that. 1954. Any guesses on who funded that research? The fossil fuel industry. In a move that sounds an awful lot like the research that tobacco companies did and then buried. Y'all remember that? The fossil fuel industry funded research in 1954, a consortium of fossil fuel companies that showed that we were on a path toward destruction. And rather than heed that science, right, that science that we all believe in that's going to save us, rather than heed that science and invest in alternatives, they put that research in the ground, just like the tobacco companies did. Because why did tobacco companies do that? Oh yeah, because addiction was profitable. Just like the tobacco companies, they put that research in the ground and pumped out more oil, more coal, more gas, all in favor of more money, more profit, and an expansion of this way of life. Addiction, in other words. Addiction to money, addiction to ever cheaper gas, more coal, more oil, addiction at the expense of the future, temporary relief and pleasure, even in the face of more and more negative consequences that we have difficulty giving up. Now, this might be a difficult place for you to move into, and that's okay. Reach back to Sally McFaig. Reach into that space of just wondering with me how we would think and act differently if this were true. Remember also that few of us in formal recovery programs ever set out with the intention of becoming addicted to anything. Remember also that denial is powerful, and the most difficult move is that first step. Richard Rohr knows something of the spiritual sickness that is addiction and the ways in which the 12 steps and the faith communities of the world might offer us a pathway out. Writing of the state that we find ourselves in, and like Dr. Mate, he too believes that addiction runs to the very root of our society, Richard Rohr says that we all take our own pattern of thinking as normative. Logical and surely true, even when it does not fully compute. We keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, even if it is not working for us. That is the self-destructive, even demonic nature of all addiction and of the mind in particular. He says we really are our own worst enemies, and salvation is primarily from ourselves. It seems humans would sooner die than change or admit that they are mistaken. And dear ones, it is past high time for us to admit that we have been mistaken. Mistaken in thinking that thinking could provide a way out. Mistaken in not seeing reality for what it is. Mistaken in waiting and wanting some grandiose uprising instead of the patient inner work and collective work of healing and spiritual transformation that might unhook us from our destructive patterns. Mistaken, in other words, in not admitting that we are powerless over capitalism and consumerism, that our lives and way of life has become unmanageable. Mistaken, at a very basic and fundamental level, about the central lie of capitalism, that we live in a world of scarcity where each of us needs to fight against each other to secure our survival, that ruin is around every corner, and that the world is a winner-take-all game where only the strong and most independent survive. In other words, we too have made another category error. We cannot create a sustainable life on this planet through consumption. We cannot buy things that are lower impact and expect that that will create a sustainable biosphere. We cannot switch to electric cars or recycled fiber sheets or the right light bulbs and the right building materials and the right food. It is far too late for that. I believe that while there may be potential promising glimmers in material science and the life cycle of goods, that we cannot wait for salvation through our intellect and technology. That path has already proven that the people pulling the levers that control it are utterly disinterested in a sustainable future. In other words, it is up to us. It is up to us to end our addiction to consumer capitalism, up to us to build new ways of consuming fewer things, up to us to create material wealth collectively and to end capitalism as we know it. It is up to us, right here, right now. But I will not pretend to have answers for you. If you are looking for a minister who heroically leads the way, you're in the wrong church. But here is what I know from my experience with addiction and my own faith in what might be possible. I know that after admitting to being powerless, after coming to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to wholeness, we turn our lives and our will over to the God of our understanding. And wonder with me again, reach back to McFaig, what if the God of our understanding was the very earth that is our creator and sustainer and the essence and provider of every single thing we touch? Join with me then in a version of what this could look like inspired by a scene from Toni Morrison's Beloved. You might recall it. Folks are gathered with baby Suggs. She pauses to pray. And then she invites people to come forward. The children come forward. They start laughing. The adults come forward. They start dancing and crying. And then she addresses them. And Morrison writes that she did not tell them to clean up their lives or to go and to sin no more. She did not tell them that they were the blessed of the earth, its inheriting meek, or its glory bound pure. She told them that the only grace they could have was the grace that they could imagine. That if they could not see it, they would not have it. The only grace we can have is the grace that we can imagine. The grace that we can imagine is the grace that we can make. And so imagine this with me, please. No grandiose movements, no big sweeping gestures, just the everyday acts that disconnect us evermore from the machine of this earth-destroying extractive capitalism and evermore into the abundance that we create together. That is already right here if we just reach out and live it. So join me in imagining. What if, over the next 5 years, those of you in the congregation living in spaces with more than 400 square feet per person, take a minute, do the math. Now you know if that's you and if it isn't. So what if over these next 5 years, by 2029, those of us in the congregation living in spaces with more than 400 square feet per person have moved in with the other half who share similarly spacious accommodations. In one move, we have wiped out the heating and cooling for a large number of our people. But it doesn't stop there. Coming together in this way, we immediately create multi-generational households, and it just gets better. Imagine it, y'all. Like, suddenly, you have the best microwave that exists in the group that is coming together to live together. You have multiple bullet blenders. You have a vacuum cleaner on every floor and some extra to sell or give away. You suddenly have your pick of the best kitchenware. Your knife set is gonna be fabulous. You have the best tools. You have the comfiest chairs. If we do this well, each household has at least one human who's a wizard in the kitchen, so you eat better, you waste less food.
And these houses are connected. You're all church members, after all. So you plan your summer gardens with other church members. No more growing all of your own tomatoes and cucumbers and too many zucchini. You plan and you plant collaboratively. You rotate crops so no one's soil gets depleted. And that network of planning, it is also a robust and vibrant mutual aid network where you share your stuff and your time and your energy. You need childcare. You need food. You need someone to help you fix a door lock or a window. You have exactly what you need right there. And if that is a stretch too far for you, what about this? What if each of us pledged not just our money and time and resources to the church, but pledged to work the steps of our recovery from capitalism by cutting our consumption of new stuff? What's the right number for your harm reduction commitment? Is it 25%? Is it 50%? Is it 75%? What if you ask our community for things you need before buying them new? What if we live the idea that we own little individually, but that we share wealth collectively? And if you don't believe that this is possible, let me tell you that this is already what folks without access to material resources already do. It's already happening. Some of it is happening within this church. More of it is happening outside these walls, which is to say that we do not need to figure this out. Others have already paved the way. In other words, let's have the courage to live our convictions, not separately, but together. A world of abundance is right here for us if we move out of scarcity and create abundance right here, not through consuming more, but through sharing more. Not through going it alone, but also not through waiting for the mass movement either, knowing that mass movements grow when people help each other put down the harm and make a new way one day at a time. Like the poet Marge Piercy says, it goes on one at a time. It starts when you care to act. It starts when you do it again and they said no. It starts when you say we and you know who you mean, and each day you mean one more. May it be so. Amen.
We are now going to read three poems by Octavia Butler, adapted from the Parable of the Sower. All that you touch, you change. All that you change, changes you. The only lasting truth is change. God is change.
In order to rise from its own ashes, a phoenix first must burn.
We are earth seed, we are flesh, self-aware, questing, problem-solving flesh.
We are that aspect of earth life best able to shape God knowingly.
We are earth life maturing, earth life preparing to fall away.
We are earth life preparing to take root.
Earth life fulfilling its purpose,
its promise,
its destiny.
Thank you. Let this end of our service be a beginning, again, of living in the possibility of hope.
One at a time.
It starts when you care to act.
It starts when you do it again and they say no.
It starts when you say we, and you know who you mean.
And each day, you mean one more.
May it be so, and amen.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from First Universalist Church of Minneapolis. We're a welcoming community that finds strength in the diversity of identities of all who find inspiration and comfort here. Podcasts are free to download, but they cost money to make. If you find spiritual sustenance from this podcast, please consider supporting our ministry. Visit firstuniversalistchurch.org/donate to make your gift. If you are able to join us in person or online for Sunday worship, we'd love to welcome you. To learn more, visit us online at firstuniversalistchurch.org.